This is the Thoughtful Travel Podcast. I'm your host, Amanda Kendall of the notaballerina.com travel blog. Every episode, I'll share travel tales from several fellow travel lovers, and together we hope to entertain and inspire you, remind you of some of your own great travel experiences, and encourage you to hit the road again soon. Hello and welcome to episode 40 of the Thoughtful Travel Podcast. Today's episode is all about the important things travel teaches us. You might remember that usually every 10 episodes I make it a bit random and throw together three guests who have had something really interesting to say that I just couldn't find a place for in another topic. And that's actually what I started out to do today. However, as I pulled these bits and pieces together, I realised they were all about the same thing. So it's funny how life works sometimes. So one of the things that I harp on about all the time is that we learn so much from travelling. Stuff that it's really hard to learn just by staying home, or that travel kind of speeds up that learning process. And I'm talking kind of, you know, big life lessons or learning about yourself or, you know, figuring out what you want to do with your life, these kinds of things and smaller lessons as well, along with, I mean, a million and billion things that travel teaches us. In any case, our three guests today have all learned something from travel, and we may not have started off talking about those topics, but that's what we ended up with. And my first guest today is a great example of that. It's Jeff Ryan, the slow traveller from the Appalachian Trail. And we actually started talking about some interesting food-related experiences he's had on his travels. And it turned into something more important even than food.
Oh, my gosh. Where do I begin? This doesn't relate to the Appalachian Trail hike, but it relates to hiking in general.
Right.
We were hiking from Mexico to Canada, myself and two friends, in 1983. So I'm dating myself a little bit here. But my buddy decided to cook dinner one night. And it was the first dinner he cooked on the trip. And it was Kraft macaroni and cheese with carrot and turnip. Mm-hmm. And it was so vile that he got out of cooking for the rest of the trip. And I still think to this day that he did it on purpose so he wouldn't have to cook anymore. But we kept him away from the cooking pots after that.
That sounds very wise of him, I think. He was very clever.
Yes. He won't fess up to it, though, even decades later. But another one we had, which was quite interesting, was I was testing some cooking gear and a pine needle got stuck on the bottom of the cooking pot. We only had one cooking pot with us. And the pine needle cluster had a bit of pitch on it. And I didn't see that this pitch ball had gotten glowing red on the bottom of the pot. And it actually burned a hole through the bottom of the pot.
Oh, no.
While we were preparing dinner and the water put the stove out. And I thought, isn't that weird? The stove went out. So I lit the stove again and, you know, was doomed to the same result, and we were stuck without a cooking pot, which led to a whole series of other side adventures, which is one of the chapters in my book.
Oh, excellent. I can just imagine. Yeah, that is a bit of a problem. If your main cooking utensil is damaged and there's no replacement, what do?
You eat a lot of granola bars and any other things that don't require cooking until you can find a road or a store or a kindly old soul who had a plethora of cooking pots, which is what happened.
Oh, really?
Yes, we met a stranger who I think drove by and saw our long faces and turned around and said, "You obviously are having some difficulty. How can I help you?"
Oh, and they had some spare pots.
Yes, many. He opened a closet and it was like going to the grocery store. He said, "I'm an outdoors person and I have a ton of cooking pots, so just take one. Oh. Don't feel obliged to return it," but I did. So that was a real fun part of the hike.
Oh, that's lovely. I love that. All of those kind of the kindness of strangers kind of stories.
Happens many times if you allow it.
Yes, exactly right. Yes, I was just talking with another guest earlier today. In fact, we had that same conversation that, you know, a lot of times it seems natural but sad to assume the worst when you approach a stranger, or a stranger approaches you, but that 99.9% of the time people are good, and everyone actually just wants to do something kind.
Yes, absolutely. And I've actually found that being on the trail actually sets you up for that framework, because your mindset, because you're out there, you're putting yourself out there to begin with. So you're sort of in the mindset of, I'm traveling and I'm out here in the world. And I think that really, that mindset really sets you up for being more, less suspect and more open.
Yeah, just like traveling anywhere does, I guess. You're in a place where perhaps there's not many other people, or everyone's, you know, not at home, and then they are kind of inclined to help a stranger out. Yeah,
that's particularly when you're out on the trail. It's a real, I'm sure anywhere, but you're especially aware of it when you're out on the trail, because people are out there because they want to be, and they've planned to be out there. And for the most part, it's a very open and engaging community because of that.
That's really lovely. Do you think that you take those lessons on board in then, you know, normal everyday life away from hiking? Are you more open with strangers and stuff?
I absolutely am. I have a really funny story. I went up to Mount Katahdin in Maine, which is a relatively nearby. It's about 4 hours away. I go up there quite a bit, and I was up there and I saw this young man walking across the last paved, the last dirt road on the way to the mountain, with a couple of beers on either side of his hiking pack, and I thought, I know what this guy did. He must be at the end of the 2,100-mile Appalachian Trail. He got beers at the last store, and I approached him and I said, I have a funny feeling you're finishing the trail. And he laughed and he said, yeah, I'm bringing a couple beers to have when I'm done. And he said he was from North Carolina, and I had a brief conversation with him. And 2 days later, as I mentioned, I was 4 hours south in Portland, Maine, where I work. And I was walking down the road to the city street to go to a coffee shop, which is an often occurrence. And I saw this boy, this young man, in front of the coffee shop strumming a guitar with a cardboard box out front, and it said on the side, I just completed the Appalachian Trail and I'm on my way home to North Carolina.
Oh, no.
And I thought it was the same guy I had seen a few days before, and I asked him how he was doing, and of course he didn't recognize me in my business regalia. Yeah. But we had quite a laugh about that, and I gave him some money to help him catch the bus back home. But it's really interesting how those things work out. And that only happened because I was open to the idea of walking up and talking to this fellow in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow, what an amazing coincidence. How fun to bump into him again. That's cool.
I think the more you travel, the more you can develop that real openness to a lot of things, but particularly, as Jeff mentioned, to meeting other people. I know that I used to consider myself quite shy. And in some ways I'm shy still deep down, but perhaps I've, especially from living in other countries and traveling a lot, I've learnt to see how much fun you can have by opening yourself up to meeting new people. And I think also working as a teacher of English, as I did in Japan and Europe, and I had to be the one to start the conversations. And that was a really useful skill to put together with that more open mindset, and be able to, to meet more people and have these interesting things pop into our lives the way that Jeff described as well. So, I think the way that travel can teach us to be more open to people is a really, really fabulous thing. As I always say, everybody get out there, travel, please. Now, my next guest is Chris Christensen, and we actually started off, well, I was asking him, you know, to tell me a story about something that had gone wrong, or, you know, something terrible that had happened on his travels. And he's an extremely well-travelled fellow and said, oh, well, you know, nothing's really ever gone wrong. And maybe, you know, if it ever did, well, I don't know, I guess I just don't remember it, which I describe as the best traveller attitude ever. But he did go on to tell me something interesting that came to him when we were talking about this.
we've been scammed in China and all those things. Nothing big.
You have the perfect traveling attitude, Chris. That's excellent. I'm trying to develop that in my son. I travel with my 6-year-old and he gets a little bit worried at times, but I always tell him that nothing can really go wrong. Everything will be okay and we will have a story to tell afterwards.
I remember when our son was 5, and this was a local trip. This is one of those just weird moments that happened. We were visiting a friend here in California, and he now had a roommate. So he said, I don't have a place for you to stay, but I booked a hotel room. It's like, well, that isn't necessary. But we drove off into the night. We passed several hotels, but he'd wanted us to stay at a nice hotel. So he drops us off at the nice hotel. We walk in, and they say, yeah, no, we gave away your room.
Oh, no.
And the only room we have has one Murphy bed. And we said, well, there's 4 of us. I have 2 kids. that doesn't really work. And they said, well, you know, we understand it was our fault. We put you up in another hotel. It turns out the hotel that he put us up in was the one around the corner from his house that we had just driven half an hour from. And so we drove another half hour back to get to this hotel. You know, and so things are already, the kids are getting tired. They're getting a little on edge, and they give us the rooms to our room, the keys to our room. And we walk into the room, and there's 2 doors for this hotel. There's an outside door and an inside door. I haven't seen much like that before. There's an internal hallway, but we go to the outside door. We use the key. We open it up. There are people sleeping in that room.
Oh, no.
An older couple sleeping in the room that they had just given us the keys for.
Oh, no.
And we quietly close the door again, hopefully without disturbing them. And we're walking back to the front desk. We figured this is probably a mistake. They did not intend for us to sleep
to all
with
sleep
this
together.
Other couple.
Yes, one would assume so.
My son starts just sobbing at this point. We're never going to get the room. We're never going to be able to sleep tonight. It's like, no, you get perspective at some point. Then somebody comes running up saying, we realized the moment you left what we had done. So sorry. Here's some other keys. But
oh, no.
Sometimes a little perspective does help.
Yes, yes, that's very true. And when you're 5 and tired, you don't have much perspective.
No. He's got a little more now, but he's 28, so.
Right, yes. Oh, good. There's hope for mine too. I'm very glad you didn't wake up those older people sleeping.
We hope we didn't, yeah.
Yeah, maybe they've never traveled again because there was this time when their hotel door opened in the middle of the night.
They may have a story for you.
Yes, well, that's right. If only we could track them down. Well, if they're listening to the podcast, do get in touch.
It is all about perspective, as Chris said, and I think learning to appreciate those kind of travel moments from a more experienced perspective makes you approach not only travel differently but life as well. I think in the same circumstance right now, my Mr. 6 would probably react in exactly the same way. Although sometimes he's incredibly resilient in those situations. I remember traveling with him to Europe when he was 3, nearly 4, and we had horrible connections through Dubai and basically didn't really sleep much. And he was up with me waiting for a shuttle bus because we'd had a half an overnight in a hotel because of the terrible connections. And he was sitting there on the steps with his teddy bear, Jack, and I was feeling like death warmed up. And, you know, he's a 3-year-old and he should be, you know, either tantruming or sleeping or just being, you know, grumpy or something. But he was just sitting and waiting. And I guess he knew the bus would come, the plane would come, everything would work out. And it does. So it's important to remember those perspectives when we're faced with the difficulties on our travels. And, of course, it's always better to be traveling than to be, you know, doing something less exciting or just to never get the chance to travel at all. Anyway, my last guest today is Jeff Sandquist, and he took off suddenly from his perhaps perfect-looking life to take a road trip around the US. And I asked him about how that had all happened, and basically we got into a great chat about the changes that that travel can make in your life, and again the lessons that it can teach us. So it was a really interesting conversation, and here's part of it.
In fact, I want to go back right to the beginning where you suddenly decided to take off on your 16-day road trip because you just weren't enjoying life. For someone who hadn't traveled much before, I mean, where did it really come from that you decided this is what's going to help me here, that I need to get away and be in a different place? Like, how did you realize that?
That's a really good question. I'm not sure that I have ever been asked that question or necessarily thought about it in that way. I think the best I can say is that I hit a breaking point. I think I hit, I don't want to say I hit rock bottom, but that's, you know, I was miserable, and I don't use that word lightly. And when I say miserable, a lot of people have tried to or have called me on that and been like, you know, were you really miserable? Like, you know, how bad could your life have really been? And what I like to I guess add to that is that for me, misery was about a life that looked really good on paper. And for every reason possible, I should have been very happy, and yet I wasn't. You know, I was married. I had a wonderful wife. I'm still married to her. And, you know, I went through a lot of education. I had a great career ahead of me. I had all these things that on paper looked to be like I had, quote unquote, arrived, that I'd made it. And yet I couldn't help but just feel empty and just feel miserable. And so I think that it just, for me, I hit that point where I didn't know what else to do. I had checked as many boxes and I had followed as many of the quote unquote how to's as I possibly could. And so the only answer left for me in my head was to do something outside of the box, to do something that I considered dramatic and outside of what I would normally do. You know, there's the quote that I always love. And what's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. And I was like, I got to do something different. I love driving. There's always been this little piece of me that the open road trip, the solo road trip, always appealed to me, but I never thought I would do it. And so that's where I jumped to.
Yeah. Oh, that's excellent. Actually, I think I can really relate. It sounds to me like you'd studied hard, you'd started life as a chiropractor, and then perhaps you could see that there wasn't much that was going to change from there on in, and you could perhaps see decades ahead of going to your clinic and treating your patients, et cetera, which is all very nice, but what's going to change from there? Perhaps that's part of the need to, like, that sounds boring, and it sounds like, you know, if it's not exactly what you love, then it's not something you can sustain for decades.
Yeah, and I don't think that as much as I thought I knew myself, I don't think I knew myself as well as I thought. Mm. And I think that that's, you know, I don't want people to take this as like, you know, it was chiropractic that drove me away,
because
I still love it, and I may end up back in chiropractic in some capacity in the future, but it was like, you know, I had to go and find myself and figure out what was truly important to me in life, and up until that point it was very much, like I said, it was focused around school and grades and stuff. It was, you know, collectibles and all my little hobbies and passions, which were great. But looking back, as I've let go of most of that stuff, I mean, my wife and I, coming on 2 years ago now, I read the book Everything That Remains by the Minimalists, and I literally declared ourselves minimalists like overnight. And we gutted like 50% of our stuff in 2 weeks before we moved.
Wow, that's fast.
And then over the past 2 years, we've gotten rid of probably another, I'd say, 20% or so. And we're getting ready to move again in about a month and a half. And I'm looking forward to getting rid of more. And it's like the less stuff that we have, the more we realize that stuff's really not that important. And it's really is not adding as much to our life as the things like travel and experiences and all these other pieces. And as I was letting go of the physical things, I realized that I didn't know how to describe myself anymore. I thought I knew myself really well, but all I knew was things about me and things that I liked. So I was like, I was a comic book reader. I was a movie buff. I was a whatever the thing is that I was into. That's what my identity was. And as soon as that was gone, I was like, oh, I guess I don't know what's important to me anymore.
Jeff's story reminds me so much of my own experience as well. And funnily enough, just a few weeks back, I was chatting with a mutual friend of ours. Jeff introduced me to Mike Campbell of the Live Immediately podcast, and we were having a chat for his podcast about the way that often you need to really hit rock bottom before you make a change in your life. But it's a shame that people often feel that way. And I think Jeff and I somehow managed to not hit rock bottom. We both had good careers and, you know, enough good stuff going on in our lives, but we decided somehow, and I still don't know to this day how I managed to decide that, or you know, what really prompted me to throw in my job and go and travel and, you know, be so glad that I did. But I think that it's an important lesson, because we're all about lessons today, that you don't have to wait until life's really terrible to make a change that you think might be good. There's no wrong decisions. There's just a life path that you can follow. And I would highly doubt that going to travel somewhere is ever going to be the wrong decision. So just something to ponder if you're in that sort of place in life where life's good, but is there something more? Could you change something? Do you have this yearning to go traveling, for instance? It often seems to be the way. Or is it just that taking a break and going traveling somewhere is the time you need and the distance you need to be able to change what could be even better in your life? So just to get a bit philosophical there, but I think travel is a really useful way to figure that out. And it's certainly changed Jeff's life, and it absolutely changed my life, and definitely for the better. I can't imagine what I would have done in the last sort of 15 years or so if I had stayed in my good job and just kept going and having the odd holiday here or there. Having moved overseas and done all kinds of different things has led me down this completely different career path, which I would not swap for anything. So you just never know what that next trip is going to mean to you. All right, enough philosophizing, but if you want to philosophize more with us, then hop over to the Facebook group. Just search for Thoughtful Travelers and ask to join, and I will approve you as soon as I see you pop up. You can also leave a rating or review on iTunes, which will make my day. Thank you in advance. And you can chat more with me on Twitter at Amanda Kendall. Just use the hashtag ThoughtfulTravelPod. And of course, I want to tell you where to find our wonderful guests today. So first up today, we had Jeff Ryan, and you can find all about him on his main website, jeffryanauthor.com. And you can also get hold of his book, Appalachian Odyssey, from Amazon. I'll leave a link in the show notes to Jeff's book. It's really great. I highly recommend it. I'm not just saying that, it's actually true. after Jeff today, I spoke with Chris Christensen, and you can find him at amateurtraveler.com. Unlike me, he only has one L in traveler because he's from the States. And you can also listen to Chris's excellent podcast, the Amateur Traveler podcast. I'll leave a link to that as well. I was on Chris's podcast recently talking about Japan, so you can look that up and find out some of the juicy gossip about Japan if you are so inclined. And finally, I also spoke with Jeff Sandquist today. He's got a new link. When I last spoke to him last year, he's moved over to a new website. He's now at drjeffsandquist.com. I'll leave a link in the show notes. And of course, in iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts, you can find his podcast, Intentionally Wandering. And I suggest you do, because it's a really good listen. Thank you so much for listening again, and I hope that you keep traveling and getting some of your own lessons from the amazing things that travel can teach us. This has been another episode of the Thoughtful Travel Podcast. Show notes and other information are at notaballerina.com/podcast. Join me again soon for another chat about why we travel. Bye for now.
Jack Rabbit FM.
For your ears.
Who is that? Hi, Puck Pass.